Good afternoon or good morning to those of you in the West, and welcome to the seminar series. My name is Nicholas Kehoe, and I will moderate today's seminar. The topic of today's seminar is freight transportation's role in economic development. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference know that you will need to mute your computer speakers or else you will hear audio over the computer speakers as well. Today we will have two presenters, Tom McQueen from the Georgia Department of Transportation and Trevor Bryden of the Southeast Michigan Council of Governments. In addition, we will have an introduction from Kerry Kissel, the Associate Director of the National Associations of Development Organizations. She will give a brief overview of the work her organization has done on case studies on transportation and economic development. Tom McQueen currently serves as Assistant Administrator for the Georgia Department of Transportation's Office of Planning. Since starting with the Georgia DOT in 1995, he has managed some of the state's largest and most complex planning studies, including the Georgia Freight and Logistics Plan, which received a 2012 Transportation Planning Excellence Award and is one subject of today's webinar. This award is sponsored by Federal Highway and the FTA and co-sponsored by the American Planning Association and TRB. His project portfolio also includes other freight and commerce-focused transportation studies, including the Georgia DOT Truck-Only Lane Feasibility Study and the Georgia DOT Interstate Systems Plan. In addition, he managed the most recent update of the Georgia Statewide Transportation Plan, which included its first focus on freight, and the Southwest Georgia Interstate Accessibility Study, which looked at growing that region's economic engine. Our second presenter, Trevor Bryden, has served as a planner for the Southeast Michigan Council of Governments since 2006, where his work has focused on regional analysis, planning, and policy for freight transportation, border crossings, and economic development. He graduated with a Master of Urban Planning degree from A. Alfred Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning at the University of Michigan with a concentration in transportation planning. Today's seminar will last for 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speaker and the final 30 minutes for the audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area, but please make sure you send your question to everyone. The presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I will start off the question and answer session with all questions previously typed in the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all questions, we will attempt to get written responses from the presenters on the unanswered questions and forward them in email with follow-up information. The PowerPoint presentation used during the seminar is available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and transcript. I will notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, you must type your first and last name into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain credits after the seminar. Please also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit the form to me after you filled it out. Finally, while Federal Highway does not formally offer professional development hour credits and will not provide proof of attendance, we have made an agenda available in the file download box that participants can use to self-certify and submit for those credits on their own. We are going to go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is on freight transportation's role in economic development. As a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they will be answered in the final 30 minutes of the seminar. Again, before we get started with the main two presentations, we will have an introduction from Kerry Kissel of the National Association of Development Organizations to give an overview of her work on case studies on transportation and economic development. I will go ahead and pull up your presentation, Kerry, but when you are ready, you can begin.
Thanks, Nick, and thanks also to Federal Highway for inviting me to be a part of today's webinar. This is a subject that's very close to the issues that we work on. In fact, I'm joining you from the Appalachian Regional Commission headquarters today, where freight, transportation, and economic development have been the subject of discussion all morning. A quick background on who the National Association of Development Organizations is. Our organization serves the national network of 500 or so regional planning and economic development organizations, which are called something different in every state. Oftentimes, Council of Governments, Regional Planning Commission, or Development District is the name that's used. They are different in every state, but they all serve multiple jurisdictions, usually multiple counties, and administer many federal and state programs related to planning, economic development, and human services. And that includes, in many states, the emerging network of rural regional transportation planning organizations, and some also have MPOs in-house. And I wanted to let you know about a new report that we've recently published, Aligning Strategies to Maximize Impact, Case Studies on Transportation and Economic Development. This was developed with support from the Federal Highway Administration and is available at the link that you see there, as well as linked from our homepages, nato.org and ruraltransportation.org. And this report focuses on initiatives from across the U.S. in rural and in metro regions that are addressing both transportation and economic development, and where noteworthy planning and implementation practices are followed. Our board of directors and leaders within our membership had identified these seven characteristics as being noteworthy planning and implementation issues, focusing on improving regional resiliency, aligning plans and investments. All of these are ways to move plans into actual project implementation and to make sure that public dollars are invested in the best way possible. It features 10 case studies in 11 states, and some of those case studies do focus specifically on freight. Understanding freight's regional impact is a case study focused on the Valdosta Lowndes MPO, which is housed in the parent organization, Southern Georgia Regional Commission. And one aspect of their transportation planning that we found particularly of interest was a series of freight studies that they have been completing, including a location quotient analysis, which looks at employment by economic sector and is something that's far more common analysis in economic development work. But they completed it as part of a freight study, and it's a beneficial use for economic development planning, business recruitment, and transportation planning. Not just the work that's completed within the MPO and the Regional Commission, but also for their partners throughout the public and private sectors in their region. Another case study is on locating freight users through a major freight user inventory that was collected by all of Kentucky's area development districts under contract to the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. All of the area development districts function as regional transportation planning organizations, and some of them also staff MPOs in-house. This project generated significant data for transportation and economic development, and has really been beneficial as the area development districts are seeing more private sector participation on their transportation advisory committees, as well as their economic development committees, as a direct result of the outreach that was conducted during this freight inventory. There are several other case studies in the report that have some freight elements related to tack composition, product prioritization, corridors, and partnerships with different local entities. You can find this report on our website, ruraltransportation.org or nato.org. If you are interested in having a hard copy, feel free to send me an email. My email address is here, and you're welcome to follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. RPO America is the name of our program that serves as the National Professional Association for Rural and Small Metro Transportation Planners. Thanks, Nick. I appreciate having the opportunity to share this report with you.
Not a problem, and I thank you for giving us that introduction. With that, we will move into presentation from Tom. And once I get your presentation up, Tom, you can get started when, give me one second. All right, you can get started whenever you are ready.
Great, we're ready to go. Thanks, Nicholas, and I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to discuss my most recent experience with freight and economic development. The focus of my talk today will be Georgia's freight and logistics plan, which wrapped up earlier this calendar year. Ask just about any economic developer, chamber president, or elected official, and they're likely to tell you that transportation is the key to expanding companies and jobs. Roads, rails, airports, and other transportation infrastructure is one of the key selling points when attracting new business and industry. What I just said pretty much sounds like the beginning of a story. In fact, it was a lead in an article that appeared in last week in the Atlanta Business Chronicle for a story called Transportation is Key for Economic Development. The article had a good basic discussion of the issue. However, I think it had one element that was missing, and that was the importance of connections. Connections are among the various stakeholders, as well as the transportation modes, is what I believe to be the magic ingredient to support freight logistics as an economic development engine. Prior to the completion of the state's freight logistics plan, several other major transportation initiatives were setting the stage in Georgia. One of the most significant was known as IT3. That stands for Investing in Tomorrow's Transportation Today. It included the development of a state strategic transportation plan covering all transportation modes and their issues, viewed in a strategic policy perspective. Here's a chart from that report, and don't get a headache yet, this early in, because there's a lot going on, but the theme of the graph shows that basically a positive historic connection between Georgia's infrastructure investment and an increasing share of GDP. The key objective from IT3 basically was to inform elected officials and public and private stakeholders that Georgia has been coasting on past successes and that underinvesting erodes the transportation performance that drives economic competitiveness. Besides IT3, another initiative was Governor Perdue's Commission for a New Georgia, which created multiple task forces for strategic growth sectors. The task forces functioned as blue ribbon committees comprised of political and industry leaders. Task force research and recommendations were couched in an overall theme of business competitiveness and economic development for the state. The Freight and Logistics Task Force had several facets, and this is one that, again, this came out of that commission. For example, in addition to infrastructure, this Freight and Logistics Task Force touched on issues such as workforce development. It also gave specific attention to a state freight and logistics plan for which we started work shortly thereafter. I've mentioned that the Georgia Freight Logistics Plan was a part of a strategic progression of evolving themes. It is worth mentioning that GDOT had included freight focus in the most recent version of our state transportation plan. We understood then that freight logistics supported the state's economic health. However, we needed to do a freight logistics plan that explicitly told the economic development story for freight logistics, was focused on that sector's economic development potential, and was done in close cooperation with senior leaders of the public and private sectors. Now that I've given you the background and the context of the project, I'll take you a little through the freight logistics plan itself in more detail. What planner doesn't like a good graphic showing an overview of work plan tasks, which we've got here? There are traditional infrastructure planning metrics that most people are familiar with. In addition, you'll see core economic considerations woven throughout. Themes with terms such as making a business case, economic value of freight, and others were a large part of the work we did. In addition to conducting these important strategic analyses, key stakeholders needed to be involved throughout, and the overarching blue area at the top signifies their continuous, and I do repeat, continuous role for input throughout the plan's development and adoption. Here's an overview of those vital stakeholders that we needed to be involved throughout. You'll notice that the core project team included representatives from the governor's office and a fellow state agency, the Department of Economic Development. To say their role and inclusion was crucial would be a serious misstatement. They were included in every meeting, including routine project status meetings on a monthly basis. That ensured we were all connected, included everyone's perspective, and most importantly, were always on message. Multiple industry-focused briefings and listening sessions were held with senior executives of Georgia-based or Georgia-focused freight and logistics intensive industries. I'm happy to say our meetings were pretty well attended, and the insights that we learned were important to the analysis we did, the recommendations, and ultimately the consensus building that came out of that exercise. One of our early findings that got folks' attention, and maybe folks watching the screen right now, was that this was similar to the theme that I discussed earlier regarding the connection between infrastructure investment and economic activity. Not too long ago, Georgia's economy was at a historical high of 21% of the regional freight and logistics sector. Now we're at 19. Return to that historic level could translate into $20 billion additional activity over a 10-year period. This message definitely seemed to resonate with the public sector and private sector leaders that we worked with continuously, and it set the tone for our discussions and analysis in the project and this sector's important role in Georgia's economy. Another early deliverable that needed to be presented, however, it needed to be presented using the language of business. You will see on this slide that it's more than simply an inventory of infrastructure typically done in planning studies that we're familiar with. Rather, these are interrelated assets of our freight system in this state. I'll see if I can get the arrows for folks that aren't real familiar. I talk about the Port of Savannah complex. Savannah's down the coast, and where the arrow is, I'll do a little bit of a commercial for Georgia, the fourth busiest container port after LA, Long Beach, and New York, New Jersey. One of the fastest growing container ports and number two in exports. And second, but not least, is the Port of Brunswick, also on the Atlantic seaboard, which is now third in U.S. auto imports. Up until last year, we were fourth, and number five for total U.S. auto and vehicle imports and exports. If anybody drives a Volkswagen, I do. It came into the Port of Brunswick. That's just one of the vehicles that they handle. Continuing with the other assets, we have our two Class 1 railroads, and what you see on the screen, the railroads that are shown in black, those are not the short lines. That would really mess up my map. Wouldn't be able to see anything. Those are the Class 1 railroads. They have a major, CSX Norfolk Southern have a significant presence in Georgia. I've included the little orange airports. Those are our top state air cargo airports. And just for fun, the little green dot, about two-thirds of the way down the state is our newest intermodal yard in Cordeal, which looks like it's off the interstate I-75. Doesn't look very close to the port, but that actually is connected to the port via short line railroad. And the state, the DOT, we invested in improvements to that short line railroad to connect this intermodal port to the Port of Savannah. And that is relatively new. Next, we kind of needed to know how our freight is moving in through and out of the state. As you can see, Georgia's freight is predominantly moved by truck, especially when we get benchmarked against regional and national trends. If anybody's curious what that kind of red maroon color is with water only, that would be something that would be like barges. So, you know, state of Louisiana, their profile, a lot of barge traffic, we just don't have that. Next questions I had, I needed to know, what are our freight intensive areas of the state? For example, in Georgia, you can see the metro areas of Atlanta and Savannah really stand out. Next thing we start to think is, how are these areas economically related? What are the freight assets that connect them? Savannah is one area of freight-intensive activity, as you saw in the previous slide, primarily due to the Port of Savannah, located on the Savannah River, just upstream from the historic city of Savannah. For our work, we were able to build on previous freight-related studies we had done in Georgia. For example, several years ago, we conducted a truck intercept surveys at many locations around the state as part of the truck lane feasibility study. This slide is one of the sample locations where we did those surveys. We worked really closely with the Georgia Ports Authority. We actually stopped truckers coming into the main gate of the port. Where are you coming from, and what are you carrying? As you can see on the inset, many were coming from relatively locally close warehouses. However, many had distinct distant origins. In fact, a significant number were coming from the I-75 corridor and metro Atlanta areas. What this kind of told us were the overall trend supported was rail intermodal is most definitely part of the asset at the Port of Savannah, but trucks that use local and long-haul roads are vital to moving freight in Georgia, especially as it relates to the ports. I've mentioned that trucks are important to move goods in and out of Port of Savannah. However, all assets are important in order to have a truly connected freight system. We looked at rail, and I use the term trading partners for the Port of Savannah from a rail perspective, who are its kind of trading areas. I started with intermodal rail, and if anybody doesn't know what intermodal rail is, you're looking at a picture that was taken on the Port of Savannah grounds. For intermodal rail, in red, Atlanta and Savannah are linked pretty strongly. If you like your trends, you're in words, there it is. Interrail intermodal, Savannah Atlanta is critical. Intermodal is not the whole story, though. Non-intermodal rail, such as carload and bulk, basically, the rest of Georgia is heavily reliant on that. There's examples below. I picked like forest products. You can see raw lumber, cut lumber, wood chips, and then that tanker truck or that tanker car down there is for kaolin clay, which we are one of the locations in the country that mines this white clay that they call white gold. And again, if you like your trends and words and not from the graph, rail carload is vital to the bulk exporters, the kaolin, agricultural, and wood products. If you're curious, by the way, I'll put a little pin in that idea about rail carload. Last week, I learned something interesting, a little trivia. Kentucky is connected to Georgia and shows up in some of the Georgia state rail flow data due to one of our largest cash crops, peanuts. Specifically, Georgia produces about 50% of the nation's peanuts, much of which is shipped by rail to the world's largest peanut butter plant in Lexington, Kentucky. So if you eat Jif peanut butter, pretty good chance that's where it came from, using Georgia peanuts shipped by carload rail. I talked earlier about the two big trade areas in Georgia, Atlanta being the kind of metro being the second. On a national level, we found that metro Atlanta is a very busy freight region. In fact, I went ahead and took out the metros that don't have direct water access. And when I say direct water access, Chicago isn't like Michigan, but the ports are not really active there. That would basically kind of put Atlanta as a number two, what I call an inland port in the country. So again, Savannah's good, Atlanta's got a lot going on. So again, what's coming in and out of Atlanta? Who are its kind of trading partner or trading regions? Similar, we found that for the truck mode, which is what this graphic shows, Atlanta basically, I've used the term kind of stocks the store for the entire Southeast, with activity stretching into the industrial Midwest and U.S. Gulf Coast. While not shown on the graphic, the rail connection involves several key states, which also include the Southeast, some of the industrial Midwest, and the Gulf Coast. So the work, again, connections are there. I talked about road and rail being really important for Metro Atlanta. However, air cargo is increasingly important. Most people know that Atlanta Airport is the number one busiest for passenger airport in the world. However, it recently broke into the top 10 list of air cargo airports. Most of Atlanta's air cargo uses belly cargo, which is carried in the belly of the plane. We expect to see more of that because AirTran Airlines was acquired by Southwest Airlines. AirTran did not carry cargo. Southwest does. So we expect to see more growth in that. In addition, we're getting increasing numbers of cargo-only airlines coming in. And matter of fact, on the bottom left is a photo of the Atlanta mayor welcoming the inaugural flight of Asiana Cargo 2 years ago. They have 4 flights a week from Seoul, Korea, with an economic connection to Georgia via cargo consisting largely of auto parts for Kia. Well, not so coincidentally, the parts come off of the planes, go in the truck, and go about an hour and a half southwest to a Kia auto plant in Georgia. So again, those connections are there, and the story needs to be told. A little shout out for the Atlanta Airport has recently won Air Cargo Week's prestigious World Air Cargo Award for Airport of the Year for the third time. One of the reasons cited was its immediate adjacency to 3 interstate highways. Again, that's part of that story, saying that modal connections proved to be important to economic development. So, I do all this work. What are the recommendations for my freight logistics plan? Here are my overarching themes that we conducted our needs analysis. They represent what came to be called our three C's: capability, capacity, and connectivity. Focusing on these themes, we found, helped us from getting stuck in modal silos or focusing too much on modal performance without also being mindful of the economic potential of the entire system and the connections between. I've included a couple examples of what the three C's would look like, so you get a kind of feel for what the definitions of those would be. But in the next slides, I'll go ahead and give you guys mode-specific recommendations. I will caveat it saying these are not an exhaustive list of freight needs in the state, but they are the macro-level, state perspective, high-level priorities. Starting with the waterways, marine. Deepening of the Port of Savannah Channel to further accommodate post-pandemic shipping was the state's top freight logistics priority. During the current expansion of the Panama Canal, Savannah Channel needs to be deepened to accommodate the increasing number and deeper and larger container ships that will be making port calls. Right now, Savannah can handle some of these larger ships, but only at high tides. Last week, you might have noticed that Georgia received some good news in that the record of decision was received from the federal government for this deepening project. A second finding and a second bullet I put on here, which might not be as familiar with most people, is that continued growth at the Port of Savannah will occur until it is what I use the term built out, or kind of bumping its head on the ceiling. They're full up and completely grown into their space. At that point, we found that it would be feasible to pursue development of a second port downstream, what is commonly referred to now as the Jasper Port, and that would be done, and it is being talked about in coordination with the state of South Carolina. Again, on a macro or state level, some major high recommendations are very important. To facilitate current and future demands, additional capacity is needed on several key interstates that provide long-haul travel for freight trucks. Many radiate from the metro Atlanta area, and you see them in kind of purple. In addition, several key interchanges that connect interstate to interstate need improvement. Many are in metro Atlanta. However, several are also in the Savannah area, and one is midway in between, located in Macon, Georgia. Interstates are important, and they are kind of the workhorse here and in most places of the country. But there are several non-interstate routes that we found were really freight-focused, again, from that high state-level view. You can see in kind of an orange, I labeled it as a kind of a Macon-LaGrange east-west connection. That would basically improve connection from the Atlantic Ocean ports, Savannah and Brunswick, that I showed you earlier, to, again, that Kia auto assembly plant that's located in LaGrange, Georgia, approximately where the arrow is. In addition, you see a north-south route known as, I think it's labeled as US 441. An improvement there would provide better access for a soon-to-be-opened Caterpillar plant. One thing that's interesting is one of the key reasons that that plant location was chosen, and Caterpillar specifically said this several times, was its ability to access the Port of Savannah for export capability. That Caterpillar plant is located approximately right about where the arrow is. Does that work? There we go. Rail improvements, again, not to be forgotten. They're vital too. For these assets, In short, newer height weight limit standards and double stacking train capabilities were identified. Several locations, but they were primarily on short line routes. And if you hadn't seen what a double stack train is, I put a picture there at the bottom. Class 1 railroads information is primarily what's shown on the right on the map. Again, not the short line, but the Class 1 railroads, the CSX and the Norfolk Southerns. And I'd like to take a special thank you to CSX Norfolk Southern for the really ongoing cooperation we had developing this information and some of the needs and findings. Again, part of an entire system, terminals are where the rail and truck modes interact and are also extremely important to a healthy freight system. I won't spend a lot of time pointing out the map, except you will see, we've kind of, the green ones are the ones that really jump out at me. There are four intermodal terminals in Metro Atlanta. There are several in Savannah, the newest one in Cordele, and there are also bulk yards in yellow, bulk and carload in yellow and orange. The biggest issue for these were in urbanized areas, Savannah and Atlanta, some of these bulk intermodal and carload yards are oftentimes located in older areas of the city, and either gentrification is happening around these in the neighborhoods surrounding them, or new development, and they're getting kind of, there's competing interests with residents and trucks need to come in and out of there and moving a freight. So that basically got some special attention of areas that will have to go maintain a vital presence in the network. Last but not least, air cargo. I won't reiterate what I talked about at Hartsfield-Jackson, except again, that is our number one in the state, air cargo airport. If anybody's somewhat familiar with the southwest state of Georgia, Albany, Georgia actually is our number two. UPS and DHL both have package sorting facilities there, and a longer runway would be beneficial to their operations. Hopefully up till now I've given you an idea of the importance of economic considerations in our plan. To further illustrate the point, I'd like to share some case studies, and these I haven't presented. We did them, and they're in the document. You can get them off the web. I had not actually, we had so much to talk about with our stakeholders that we didn't actually present these. So I'm going to take a minute and show you these, and hopefully you find some interest in this to give you an idea of kind of our deep dives. We looked forward to see what industry sectors would be expected to grow in Georgia in the future. Of these, we singled out three that could be considered the most freight intensive. From there, we selected three kind of Georgia-based or Georgia-focused industries as example companies. Information came from interviews with them and or publicly available information. From these three, you will see that everything really is connected within the state, the adjacent region, and the nation. Freight knows no boundaries. Our first industry case was for broilers. Broilers are chickens that are bred and raised specifically for meat production. Typically, they are shipped in a frozen condition. This industry is very important to the American South and Southeast, as you can see on this map. Especially, we're really keen on it in Georgia because we are the top producer and exporter of broilers. In fact, it's so important it contributes approximately $4.4 billion to our economy. For this case study, in the center of the map, should be a little yellow star. That's Perry, Georgia, where we picked one typical distribution center from one typical broiler company. You will see that this site has many connections with neighboring states. For example, receiving live chicken from neighboring states and areas of the East Coast. And you'll see that, I think that shows on the map as blue. Processed meat is distributed within Georgia as well as to adjacent states. This is a little interesting trivia, I thought, at least for me. In addition, some of the processed meat is exported to Russia via the port of Jacksonville, Florida. Russia is one of the top three export markets for U.S. broilers. So again, it's important to the state of Georgia. If there's other state production areas that are part of this network, and again, as a country, the United States exports chicken to Russia through the port of Jacksonville. Second case study, another really big Georgia industry. Forest products. So much so, it's approximately 24% of our manufacturing output and $25 billion to our economy. Again, this is just one company operating in Georgia. For this company, raw wood is brought in from other states for processing and distribution. Distribution, again, can include foreign export markets. In this case, we have an example of paper products that are actually produced in Savannah, Georgia, exported through the port of Savannah to Europe. For those of you that are interested and not in Georgia, I did a little digging to find out where this company's raw wood that it shows off the map where they're getting it from should be appearing on your lower left screen. So if you're in eastern North Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, parts of even Oklahoma and Texas, that's where a lot of, again, that raw timber coming in for this one company in this one state. So again, crossing state borders, everything's connected. Third one, and I would be remiss if I didn't say it. Home Depot, their corporate headquarters is, you know, about 7 miles up the road from my office. The Home Depot, they provide, they have stores in Canada, U.S., and Mexico. This case today was unique because it's, in addition to using truck and rail modes, we finally got some intermodal connections I can talk about. That one is a purple kind of cluster in Metro Atlanta. We should be showing right about there. So they use, in Georgia, is the center of Home Depot's distribution and deployment activities for stores in the state as well as the Southeast. Working together, rail, trucking, and the Port of Savannah are the predominant modes in this example. Now that I'm pretty much ended, almost at the end of my talk, I would like to take a minute to revisit the plan's recommendations and provide a look at the economic impact metrics we did for these recommendations. For this plan, we focused on return of investment as our overall economic metric. Sometimes people use benefit cost, but for this we needed a more robust metric. In addition, we found this was the economic metric that we heard from our private sector stakeholders. That term sung to them when they saw this. If you're any additional information for the audience, if you're most curious, GDOT's Office of Planning, we purchased the REMI data, used it for this, and we're also currently right now developing a framework and tool to pre-process that data for input and pre-process data for input into REMI and some post-process outputs. In other words, prioritization of individual projects based on their ability to support economic competitiveness will definitely be on our radar very soon. There's the economic return on investment, jumping in at the end. Almost done, but this is kind of a fun little story that I've got to tell, that it's part of that people in the industry, those of us and planners that are doing this job. Here's an example of a project that actually, I think it's open to traffic now. What you're looking at is, in those cranes in the foreground, the background, one of the Port of Savannah main gates. Those trucks are all there because that kind of dirt excavated area to the right, that's where the grade separation, basically, if anybody doesn't know what it is, it's a separation of it where a rail line and a highway cross right now. So those trucks have basically just gotten stopped by a train. The train passed, the gates went up, and the trucks kind of got released in a kind of a torrent heading towards the main gates of the port. So the project again is open, and the main kind of justification we talked about was providing better operations on that highway, increasing safety from that rail crossing. But you know what? Again, that's kind of the planner vernacular. This thing, everything we do needs to be talking about those issues plus economic development. Second part of the story, again, from that same vantage point, I looked to my left and I took that picture. Lo and behold, the grade separation will allow expansion of the intermodal yard. It's on port property, as you see there on the right. Well, what does that mean? You know, it's a safety project. It's improving operations of the road. Not really. In addition, this project cuts approximately a round trip to Atlanta by 6 hours, and those are intermodal. And I talked to you earlier about that connection of intermodal between Savannah and Atlanta. That's part of my story, and those are the things that we need to be able to connect as part of all of our work. That was mine. For those of you who are interested, here's the website where you can get this and all the information on the freight logistics plan. I'll summarize on a personal level. I found this quote from poet Jane Hirschfield. This summarizes the biggest thing I learned about freight logistics and economic development. This is a short one. She said, "Everything changes. Everything is connected. Pay attention." Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Tom. Again, we will take questions at the end of the seminar, and we will now begin with our second presentation by Trevor Bryden of the Southeast Michigan Council of Governments. Trevor, I'll go ahead and get your presentation up now, and once you are ready, you can begin.
Thank you, Nicholas. Good afternoon to everyone. Good morning to everyone on the West Coast. Just a second here. I'm trying to see if I have control over my slides, and I do. All right. Here to talk a little bit about the freight and economic analysis study that we conducted here at SEMCOG. This was concluded earlier this year, and want to give a little bit of background about why we went into this. For a number of years now, Michigan has been a part of a single state recession throughout the 2000s, and then with the most recent economic situation, almost experienced a near-death occurrence of our core industry in the auto industry. Throughout the 2000s, it gave us some soul-searching, us being many, many different institutions within Michigan, about our reliance upon the auto industry being such a predominant part of our economic makeup, and began looking at many other sectors as possible diversity and expansion. Amongst those industries that were looked at, transportation, distribution, and logistics seemed like a possible good fit for expanding. One, because it was we had infrastructure built out to serve the auto industry, and another because it seemed like we had a lot of labor that would suit it well as well. And so, so they've developed a number of working partnerships. We've been working pretty closely with the Detroit Regional Chamber that has identified transportation as a priority for their institution, and has been a big promoter of some infrastructure projects that are planned for our area. They've got a TransLinked initiative that focuses on trying to promote the transportation, distribution, logistics sector, and we're instrumental in getting a private sector feedback for a whole lot of our planning efforts. Also, the state of Michigan has been a part of bringing together several departments within state government: the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, the Michigan Department of Transportation, and the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. Have all had their heads meeting together for a good number of years now to talk about how to meld economic development with transportation, with our transportation assets, and how to get the most use out of our transportation assets in the service of economic development. Local governments have also taken a close look at this. There was recent legislation passed to form Next Michigan Development Corporations, that can use certain incentives to parlay their transportation assets and mix those with incentives and tax abatements to create development zones that focus on development with a transportation focus. Our large public universities, Michigan State, Wayne State, and U of M, amongst others, have also had some of their departments that have lent intellectual resources and energy to expanding this part of our economy, as well as some foundational support as well to fund some studies here, particularly the New Economy Initiative. This particular study that I'm going to be detailing was a grant from the Michigan Department of Transportation, they were a close partner in working through this as well. Just to give you a geographic perspective, this is a map that focuses in on our region. Our seven-county planning region that SEMCOG serves is outlined in blue in the center. The Detroit Regional Chamber has the larger salmon, the darker salmon to orange. They cover 10 counties. And in general, our economic connections, our core economic connections, are those counties that are highlighted in orange, that are outside our region. Those include some of the counties just outside of our planning region, as well as the counties in northwest Ohio, particularly those that are covered by TMCOG, the Toledo Metropolitan Area Council of Governments, that's a close partner with us, as well as counties in Canada that participate regularly in economy across the river. So going into the study, we wanted to We thought we knew a few things about our freight system. That it's a system that's extensive and mature. If you look back at our the map here, we have roads that connect many places throughout a region. We have railroads that run the same way, and airports and marine ports that serve core parts of our business as well. With all the economic change, we wanted to know built many of these assets to serve the auto industry, which has been a large part of our economy for many years. This heavy manufacturing aspects of it causes necessity to move large volumes of heavy goods in and out of our region and around our region. Since we are a peninsula state, much of the goods that we draw in and produce and send back out were in service to local industry, so have less of a traditional transportation, distribution, logistics operation that we serve less as a hub than other areas in the middle of the country. But to the degree that we do serve as a hub, it's mostly related to our trade with Canada, which we serve as an essential gateway, both in Port Huron and in Detroit, where there's both multiple land crossings for trucks and for rail. We wanted to know some more things about, since our economy was changing so quickly, we wanted to know how well our current system is still serving freight-focused businesses. We wanted to know how the freight system is acting as either a barrier or an asset for economic growth, and we wanted to see how we could best realize the greatest return on investments to our transportation system and the freight system in particular. So we designed the study in four different parts. We wanted to focus on developing internal resources to be able to continue this work and integrate it into our transportation planning. We wanted to broaden our relationships with the freight community in our region. We wanted to have a good, solid description of freight flows as we could describe them. We wanted to take a look at individual core industries and see how they were how transportation needs fit their overall businesses, and we also wanted a way to approach economic analysis since it's becoming a greater part of a number of different planning requirements, both in the broader plan and also for discretionary grants. And the study tried to, whenever possible, expand beyond our core planning, our core county borders. We included representation on the study advisory committee from Toledo and from Windsor, and we wanted to gather data as well from outside of our region whenever possible. Learning more about how businesses were interacting with our freight system, we conducted a number of interviews and a survey. We got responses from a broad range of system users, from manufacturing, logistics, railroads, warehousing, and retailing. We asked a wide variety of questions, not just transportation related, and to try to get some perspective of how broader business concerns were relating to their concerns about the transportation system. In general, the core business concerns prevailed for these businesses. They were much more concerned at the time with access to credit, access to labor, and some other more business side concerns. When they expressed transportation concerns, there was some. They talked about incoming delivery costs. Some of those are related to our peninsula status. There were some logistical concerns at our borders and ports that can have some variability at how you can cross these points in our system. And also the railroads accessing customers, since they've drawn back some from having individual points of service at at railroad sidings and move towards more accessing their customers through terminals. We also asked them about particular bottlenecks on our system and where they were experiencing trouble, and I've mapped these out to show approximately where they said that they were having some issues. These are spread throughout our core urban part of our region. However, if anyone described any particular part of the system, I colored it down. And then you'll see some small numbers. I'll get to a more zoomed-in version of this in just a second. But those numbers represent the number of instances that a particular area was mentioned. Some of the recurring assets that were called out were border crossings, rail and intermodal assets, urban freeways, and especially the confluence of those freeways or interchanges. And then there were a number of local connections that were identified as well. This is just a zoomed-in version of this, and you can see the clustering of some of these responses at major interchanges, at railroad yards, and especially at border crossings. This just somewhat summarizes what I just had to say, and so. For a large part of it, there weren't a whole lot of new assets that were identified as needed in our region, but the better performance of existing assets and our connection to internationally to Canada. We also took a look at freight flows. This is pretty common for these types of studies, and we took a look at modes of transport and breakdowns by industry and origin and destination. The data for this was a TransSearch database that was supplied to us from Michigan Department of Transportation. And this is just an example of some of the information we pulled out as characteristic of freight travel in our region. About 50% of our goods in come from adjacent states or within the state of Michigan or Canada, and about 60% out. Are from that same area. This is characteristic of the auto industry supply chain that is largely truck-based that ships goods very quickly between suppliers and plants. And there's also a strong connection that we have with Mexico as well. We do have lots of flow in and out along NAFTA trade corridors that have developed over the years since NAFTA came into effect, and the auto industry has located its plants and suppliers to take advantage of the free trade agreement. We took a look at some industry characteristics. We know that different industries have different transportation needs, and we wanted to take a closer look at some of our core industries. We created some transportation profiles of these industries to include industry-specific trends and issues and opportunities. We looked at some site selection criteria for these industries and supply chain characteristics of these industries. We weren't able to cover every single industry in our region, so we selected industries to take a close look at industries with high regional concentrations in our area, large employment bases in our area, industries that were growing, and industries that were reliant upon shipping. Now, it turns out there's kind of a bifurcation in our region between industries that are highly concentrated with large employment consisting of one group and growing industries consisting of another group. And those that are reliant upon shipping tend to be those that are existing industries with high regional concentration and large employment rather than those that are rather than those that are faster growing industries, which tend to be more in the healthcare and hospitality area. So here's a list of the industries that we profiled: transportation equipment manufacturing, machinery manufacturing, plastics and rubber parts manufacturing, fabricated metal parts manufacturing. All of these are largely tied to the auto industry. We looked at wholesale trade because of its high dependence upon transportation, and it being a focus for lots of economic development efforts. We looked at healthcare and food accommodation services just to make sure that there were any trends that had large impacts upon transportation that we should be taking a close look at. Moving on to the final phase of our study, which was to develop a way to approach economic analysis. We wanted to have something that was more spreadsheet-based, one that was consistent with SEMCOG practices and existing tools. It was able to leverage available resources, for instance, our travel demand. For instance, our travel demand model, as well as Michigan Department of Transportation's economic tools. And MDOT has the capability of running a pretty sophisticated REMI model, as well as has pre and post processing tools that are able to answer questions as they come, as well as apply them to their own transportation plans. We also wanted to consider economic impacts of freight-related and other transportation projects. Here's a quick diagram of the model that we, or the tool that we developed. We have our travel modeling that feeds into county-level transportation performance measures, largely vehicle miles traveled and vehicle hours traveled. When you take a look at something that improves transportation, a project that improves transportation, there will be a difference between VMT and VHT before and after. And then we were able to work closely with Michigan Department of Transportation to receive responses from their economic modeling and be able to create general curves that we're able to estimate the impact by county of transportation improvements in our area. And we're able to get some rule of thumbs built into our spreadsheet tool that will put us about within 10% of what we would get with a full economic analysis using a sophisticated tool. And from there, you get the direct, indirect, and induced economic effects. This tool estimates many of the things that are commonly expected from these economic analyses: gross regional product, personal income, employment, total employment and by industry group, and cost effectiveness measures, including benefit cost ratio and net present value. And here's some sample results from the output for the tool that shows you the industry breakdown and some of the outputs that we would get from running this tool. Coming out of this whole study, there's been some reinforcement of some existing policies and some reinvigoration of some others. There's large emphasis on improving our border crossings. This includes a new proposed crossing called the New International Trade Crossing. This just got a large boost this past election by having a proposal that was defeated that would have potentially hampered the advancement of this project. This is one of the governor's major priorities in Michigan, and it is Canada's number one infrastructure priority. There's also existing crossings in Port Huron that also have large improvement projects that are slated to occur there, and those continue to be very important for freight. We want to improve intermodal freight transfers. There's a project that's been development has a record of decision that will advance intermodal freight travel in our area. Improve freeway port performance and reliability. The number of freeways that we have seems to be adequate, but their performance and reliability, especially in the PM peak hour, needs to be considered heavily in our plans and weighed against other concerns in our plans. Taking a look at last mile connections between major highways and rail lines, especially for some of the businesses that got back to us about connecting to our freeways. There were a number of concerns about extending the life of pavement and the toll that our roads take on transportation equipment for trucks. and a national ballast water standard was the top priority from our marine side. Michigan has a ballast water standard that exceeds those of surrounding states, and as a result has lost business to surrounding states on the marine side. Having one national rule that protects our water quality as well as gives a standard for commercial business on the Great Lakes is desperately needed. Recommendations for the planning side, we want to continue coordinating with the Detroit Regional Chamber and others that are interested in advancing transportation and economic development. Need ongoing industry engagement to springboard off of our outreach with this study and focus on system flexibility, both with intermodal transfer, border trade, and freeway performance. Just to focus some on our high-level projects, our top priority projects, the new international trade crossing connects the world's largest trading partnership. There's over $90 billion a year that goes across the Detroit crossings. It supports Canadian trade, supports a lot of Michigan-based jobs, over 230,000. It's needed for redundancy should one span or connection go out. We need to have a way to continue to provide crossings for businesses across the border. And it's Canada's top infrastructure priority, so much so that they're willing to pay Michigan's share of the bridge, which is a great deal for us. And quickly, the Detroit Intermodal Freight Terminal will be able to fix many of the rail interlockers that have caused major delays in the region for decades, add lift capacity to meet future demand, improve business and residential conditions around these terminals. And these are in neighborhoods that are in substantial need of attention and investment. And it's a pretty decent deal as well, being a 50-50 public-private partnership with the railroads. And here's a map just showing the concentration of some of these projects in the southwest Detroit area, Detroit being north of Canada on the left side and Windsor being on the right side. And the new crossing in the bottom, a proposed improvement of the Ambassador Bridge being next up the river, a improvement of a rail tunnel, also being a very hopeful development in our area, and the Detroit Intermodal Freight Terminal happening just a mile away from the new crossing. If you want to check out more of our resources, you can visit our website. I've provided a link there for our freight and economic analysis on our freight page, which has both the core report and all the appendices, as well as a look at our economic analysis tool. And also I want to point you towards the Detroit Regional Chamber's website. They also have conducted a companion study that looks more towards our connections to other areas of the country and internationally to try to take a look at our strengths as far as trade goes. And with that, I'll turn it back to Nicholas and be happy to answer any questions.